Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Since the novel coronavirus arrived in the United States, we've followed the numbers, infection rates, hospital capacity, and deaths. Behind each of those numbers is a deeply personal story of agony and isolation, hope, and community. A new Frontline film looks at one such story. Love, Life, and the Virus focuses on a mother's fight to survive COVID-19 and to see her newborn baby. It's the story of how the coronavirus struck an immigrant family, their struggle to be reunited, and a community that rallied around them. The new Frontline documentary airs Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Central on SDPB TV. That's 8 p.m. Mountain Time. It'll be available to stream Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central at pbs.org/frontline and in the PBS video app. Oscar Guerra is the producer of Life, Love, and the Virus and the director and writer as well, I believe, and he's joining us on In the Moment now to talk about this film. Good morning, Oscar. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's my pleasure.
I want to talk about this story in a moment, but first, it's a beautiful film, and I think that has to be noted. You are a filmmaker, and there's no narration to this. It's just really compelling as you come along emotionally with this family. Tell me a little bit about what kind of stories you look for as a filmmaker that pull you into the story and that you know are going to have the same impact on viewers.
I think that it's the way in which this story is unique is that, you know, we've heard so many, you know, terrible news about the hard reality that we're going through. And this film tells you, you know, what can happen when the community starts working together. You know, what can we do to help each other? And it's almost like a case study. You know, what happens when different community partners start working with each other, you start supporting, and you know, miracles can happen. I think this is a story that brings love, and also an exploration of the reality for many working class Latino families.
Yeah. Tell me how you met this family and how you were able to follow them along through, this really, you know, dangerous, the contagion, and
right.
how did you kind of make this film and get the access that you did to their willingness to share their story?
Right. Well, I'm a professor. I'm a filmmaker, but I'm also a professor. I teach film and video at the University of Connecticut, and me and my family, we just recently moved to Stamford, Connecticut from San Francisco. So we've been here in the area for not even a year. So everything started happening, you know, during the peak of the pandemic. My wife, she's a critical care nurse, and she works at Stamford Hospital. So I just, you know, it was a very rough time for us as a family. It wasn't easy for my wife. You know, I think that part of the story became the inspiration about what she was telling me. You know, when she would come back from work, we have a 2-year-old daughter. She was scared just to hug her daughter, just to kiss her. And I said, I need to start documenting this one way or another. It wasn't easy to be outside, like you accurately mentioned. You know, you needed to be very, very careful with the, you know, going out there. I decided to get in touch with photojournalist John Moore, who works for Getty Images. I didn't know him, but I knew that he was a local. He lived here in Stamford as well. And I told him, hey, listen, I sent him an Instagram message because my wife insisted so much. And I said, okay, I'm going to send him the message so you see that he's not going to respond. And he did. You know, I introduced myself. I said, I'm a professor at UConn. I'm a filmmaker, and I would love to start, you know, collaborating with you. Let's see if we can start covering. I would love to cover what you're doing. And he told me, yeah, that's great. Let's talk more about this. And it was because of my wife that we were able to get access to a hospital. If you can imagine, you know, going with cameras to a hospital is not easy. And going to a hospital with cameras in the middle of a pandemic, it was very, very challenging. It took us almost a month to be able to get all the permits, all the safety requirements. You know, the hospital was very thorough, but they were willing to collaborate. And And Catalina Horak from Building One Community told John about this family. She said, you know what, I think that there might be an interesting story here, and we're not sure what's going to happen, but if you get a chance to go to the hospital, let's see if we can have a, you know, if we can talk to her at all. So it was a very organic growth, you know, the way in which it started. It started as one thing, but I think that's the beauty about documentary. You just go out there and you start listening to people and listen to their stories. And that's how everything started. We met Thule that day when we were there in the hospital. And, you know, she just started sharing some of her story, and it was just fascinating. It was fascinating. It was heartbreaking, but it was there was a lot of hope. And I think that the way in which the hospital, the community partners, and everyone else just rally around this family was unbelievable. And of course, it actually became big news when it first started because of the Miss Luciana Lira, the elementary school teacher that came to the rescue. And she pretty much helped the family so much that it was just unbelievable. From different angles, the story was just unheard of.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about essential workers, those healthcare workers, and then your essential work, too, with creating this piece of art, which is also telling the truth and showing us. I mean, it's very inspiring to sort of see the community and to see how sick these people are as well. So let's, for people who haven't been able to watch a screener like I have, tell us a little bit about Zuli. And, you know, she's in a coma she's pregnant, she's COVID-19 positive. We don't know if she's going to live in the beginning of our time with her. But as the story goes on, she's able to tell what her experience is like, not only from being ill, but the trauma that she experiences from the time of, you know, the almost hallucinations that she has. I don't know what the right word is to use there, but the things that she sees while she is being treated. And there's a lot happening for this woman, and she tells us herself how she feels. Tell us a little bit about her and the things that you heard from her about what this journey was like.
Right. So Sudi was around 8 months pregnant when she began to cough and wheeze. She was actually having a, you know, like a regular checkup appointment at a local clinic here. And it was a nurse there that said, you know what, you need to go to the hospital. She didn't want to go to the hospital. Everyone was so scared. You know, you don't want to go to the hospital during the peak of the pandemic because you don't know what's going to happen. But she could hardly breathe. You know, Thule and her husband, Marvin, it's Marvin, the husband, and 7-year-old Junior. That's the family that I have the pleasure to follow for this time. They said, you know what, there's no choice. She has to go to the hospital because they send the ambulance. She goes to the hospital. And then, you know, it comes all this hospitalization part, the COVID-19 diagnosis. And the problem was that the baby's oxygen level were getting really, really low. So she had to deliver weeks early. So it was a moment of crisis. So before she was ready to give birth, She had to be intubated to have an emergency C-section. So they allow her to call someone. And out of everyone in the world that she could have called, she called the elementary school teacher, Miss Luciana Lira. And she said, please take care of my son, my husband, and my baby. You know, and when I was talking to Miss Lira, she said, I thought it was a prank, you know, because you would hear a very raspy voice. We're talking about a person who can hardly breathe. Imagine you receiving that phone call and someone telling you, this is me. I know you don't know me that well, but I need you to do this for me. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was a very dramatic moment for Miss Lira. And for a woman like that, you know, just to say, she said, I'm going to do the best that I can, so don't worry about anything. That's just, you know, that on its own, it's huge. You know, it tells you about the commitment of our teachers. And how they go out of their way to make sure that their families are okay. So, right. So that's why the story became more complex, you know, in that way.
Yeah, and Miss Lyra talks about her husband and the American dream, and she talks about immigrants who come here, and she's driven by her compassion. It's a very emotional journey for her throughout as well, and she's an advocate for Zuli and her family. But tell us a little bit about how Miss Lyra sort of says, you know, this is what we do, and this is why, because this is one step on a long journey of people. You know, coming from, in this case, Guatemala, coming from around the world to become Americans and to find this place and to change the place that they have come to. She speaks so eloquently about that because of her own experience.
You know what? I think she's a very smart woman, and I think she's right about that. You know, she's from Brazil, Sully from Guatemala, I'm from Mexico, Catalina from Building One Community is from Colombia. It's we're all immigrants. You know, we and everyone is an immigrant at some point in their family, and this is what we have to do. We have to be there for each other. We have to be there for not just for us, but for our community as well. And I think that this story is a good case study of how things can work out. It's, I mean, at that moment, I don't think that Miss Lyra was thinking, "Oh, she's from Guatemala. I'm going to help her." I think she would have helped the person regardless of where they were coming from, you know. And I think that's the beauty about this, that you forget about where you're coming from, who you are. There's a need, and I'm going to help out. I think that's one of the great things about a moment of crisis like the one that we're still living, to be honest. I think it reveals the worst, but also the best in us. And I think this story is, it's refreshing in a way, because it tells you that it's possible. You know, it's possible to work as one people, because we're one people. And the result can be very, very positive.
And this effort, this community-wide effort, goes beyond Miss Lyra. There are people who in Stamford are, you know, figuring out food and diapers and formula, and not just for this family, but for others who have been impacted. Talk a little bit about, and I also want to ask you about the people in the hospital and just their devotion and dedication that we really get to hear. But first, this community who outside the healthcare setting is saying these people, you know, Marvin's lost his job at this point. We all have to pull together, and they're surprised by, you know, the urgency and the need, but they rise to the occasion. What drives that sense of community, especially during a time when it would be very easy to be to self-preserve and, you know,
Of
stay
course.
at home, stay behind closed doors, keep all your money just in case you're next, and yet we see this huge generosity. Tell me about that in the community, and then we'll talk about the providers at the healthcare center too.
Jesus, I think that's a great question, and I wish I had like the full answer. So I'm going to give you what I think, you know, because I think it goes even beyond that. And I keep asking myself the same question. You know, it's a time where nobody should be out. Everyone should be more self-protecting. And you see this generosity in people. You see I mean, I'm completely biased because my wife is a critical care nurse, so I know what she does. You know, and I know the beautiful work that she's doing and how she was working nonstop, even more than usual during the peak of the pandemic. And you have a hospital that is helping out, you know, no questions asked. You're here. We're going to save your life. I was talking to Dr. Bernstein and Nurse Erica in the film. If you see there, I was asking them a lot of questions about, you know, what was going on here at that moment. And Nurse Erica, she said, "You know what? I took care of her for one night because she was there for almost a month. You know, can you imagine being there for almost a month? Like she pretty much like almost everyone in the hospital knew who she was, and so many people helped out. I had the chance to talk to some of some of the people that were involved, but there were so many people involved there. And you know, she received this experimental treatment, as Dr. Bernstein pointed out. And I asked Dr. Bernstein, I said, what do you think saved her life? You think it was the experimental treatment? And he said, I think, you know, we like to think that the treatment helps, you know, that we as doctors, we do something, but it's really the nurses, the people that are on the bedside giving you all that care that you need so bad. that what really pulls it through. Nurse Erica was telling me she was in a coma for 18 days. That's a lot. And Nurse Erica said, you know what? We knew that she couldn't listen to us, but to maintain her dignity, we would talk to her all the time. We'd say we're about to do this or that. Miss Lear was very insistent. She said, I know that she can see us, but can we do a video conference so she can see her baby? And you know, those moments were very were heartbreaking. Because you know what's going on, and you have this group of people surrounding you, being so generous and having the infrastructure like a hospital backing you up. You know, I think that they consider themselves very, very lucky in what happened. In the film, I asked Tuli, you know, a question, and she, it took her a while to figure out. But I asked her, what do you think would have happened if this happened to you in Guatemala, you know, and she said, I think I would have probably died, you know, because we don't have the resources, we don't have this type of maybe there's a support, but there's just a different infrastructure. So I think she's very aware of that. I think that they're very aware that their story it's really a miracle, and that who made that possible? It was, you know, it was the hospital saving her life and her baby's life, Miss Lyra being completely selfless and being so generous. Miss Lyra thought she was going to take care of the baby for 2 or 3 days, and she ended up keeping the baby for 5.5 weeks. And you got to understand that it's like you're taking care of a baby. She didn't know if mom was going to make it. Nobody knew if mom was going to make it. Nobody knew what was going to happen after the discharge. Nobody knew what was going to happen with the baby. Now we know that, you know, babies are not that affected by COVID, but nobody knew that at that time. So that's the reality. It's you're going through something and you don't think twice. You say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to help it. The community partners, Building One Community, Tiny Miracle, different organizations that said, you know what, let's help you out. We're going to help you with rent. We're going to bring food. The community at large. You know, people donating. Miss Lyra started a GoFundMe thing that was so successful. I think that they were able to raise like more than $50,000. And that just tells you that people were so, they said, you know what? They're part of us. They're one of us. So we're going to help them. So I think that was beautiful. You know, and Miss Lyra was there so fast. She said, people that you would never think of, they were donating out, and she was receiving messages saying, hey, you know what you're doing is amazing, here you go. So that's why I think, and we think, that this is really a case study of something that can happen and ideally should happen.
Yeah. The film is called Love, Life, and the Virus. We've been talking with Dr. Oscar Guerra, the creator of this film, and you can see it as a new Frontline documentary airing Tuesday night, 9 Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB-TV. You can also stream it Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central at pbs.org/frontline and in that PBS video app. Oscar, thank you so much for this beautiful work that you have put into the world, and thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.